Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's the My First Gig Podcast, whoa, sharing stories of first gigs and shows, comedians sharing their memories, the fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy, with Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast, here we go.
Hello and welcome to episode 10, the series finale of My First Gig Podcast with me, Dwayne Dugan. Thank you so much for joining me, guys. Last week, fantastic episode with the wonderful Kiri Pritchard-McLean. If you've not heard that, go back and check it out. It's a very strange time to bring you a podcast. Hopefully this can distract you or keep you company or cure the boredom for a while wherever you are in the world. I hope you're keeping safe. I came on here last week and just started kind of riffing and joking about some of the things going on in the world with this whole coronavirus. And I'll be honest, a lot of what I was saying was just kind of ideas I was practicing that I then used at shows that night, trying to stay on my feet at these shows. Obviously, I'd be talking about it a lot because it's what's on everybody's mind. Even if we are looking for a break or a distraction, it's almost like if you don't mention it, you're not very present. And as host, I like to talk about, you know, the then and the now. And let the acts do their material then. And, you know, even then we were just joking about it. You know, it was the Thursday and the Friday before Paddy's weekend. It was purely tourists. We kept going with our shows. One of our acts couldn't make it over from America, but that was like a precautionary measure that he took based on Trump's travel ban, which now does extend even further to the UK and Ireland, which means I know he would have been able to get back, but it just wouldn't have been so much hassle. And basically since last week, our shows have stopped, our pubs have closed. It's St. Patrick's Day today as I record this. I know the episode is out tomorrow. I'm coming from you from the past. If you're listening to this, it has got me. No, sorry, that's not funny, is it? Oh, maybe it is. I don't know. We need a break. We're all kind of going mad here. So basically, yeah, a lot of the stuff, we were just still kind of joking about it. And it's getting quite serious now. Wherever you are, hope you're staying safe. Hope you're keeping entertained. There's a lot of great people online doing a lot of fun things. You know, if we want to take a little break from just promoting this podcast, if any of you are listening and you know of someone who's doing something fun to keep people entertained or keep people from going insane or just trying to help and, you know, do whatever we can in these very uncertain and unprecedented times, then give them a shout out to us at My First Gig Pod and we'll give them another shout out then. I'm here. I came down to visit my mother, our Taoiseach here in Ireland, which is our Prime Minister. What's the American equivalent? Is the Prime Minister a thing? He's about to speak to the nation now in about 15 minutes and could tell us, here, lads, look, I've got the sixth sense. All of you are dead all along. Nothing to worry about because it can't get you because, look, we're actually not here. So who knows? So I'm down here. Could be here for a very long time, but I'm down here visiting my mother and I'm visiting my cat. A couple of weeks ago, you heard me talking about my cat. She's sleeping next to me now. How are you? Come on, Kitty, talk to them. Say something interesting. Well, what's your first memory of comedy, Kitty? And you can interpret that however you wish. And when did you think you were going to start to give it a go? And that's all from Kitty there. Be sure to check her out at Kitty on all social media. We're going mad. We're absolutely going mad. Like, I was on a bus down here yesterday. It's a 3-hour bus. Nobody's saying a word. Everyone's trying to like just pretend it was a busy bus. Like, everyone's just trying to pretend that we're not stuck on this bus for 3 hours in close proximity to everybody. Like, if somebody had it on that bus, we're all getting it. They say you gotta be 50 minutes near them. 3 hours. And the only thing that the bus driver did was, just as we took off, he said, hey, if you need to cough or sneeze, do it into tissue. If you don't have tissue, he goes, we've got tissue at the front and the back of the bus, lots of it. And then there was silence from everybody. Nobody said a word. Like, it was eerily quiet. I think everyone was just kind of in their own heads, trying to just wait for the journey to be over. And then about 20 minutes ago, the intercom pops up and we're pulling in just by this big roundabout that's just before the city. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to say, oh, look, we're going to be Cork in 10 minutes' time. And he just said, right, guys, here's a little one for you. And he hadn't had the radio or music on at all. And now, not just his own radio, but through the entire speakers, he just starts playing the Pogues, Rainy Night in Soho. We're all just sitting there, just going to like make an eye contact, being like, can you hear this too? This isn't part of the madness, is it? This isn't part of the breakdown. It's quite strange. I should introduce my guest. My guest today is Langston Kerman. Langston Kerman is an American comedian. He was over here at the Vodafone Comedy Festival last year. I mentioned a little bit about the Vodafone Comedy Festival here in Dublin for the Sean Walsh episode. Thankfully, we had a little quieter room now, so it's not as noisy in the background, if you remember that one. If not, go check it out. Many people, three people, have said it's their favourite episode, so go check it out. The Vodafone Comedy Festival, it's my favourite weekend of the year. It's the last weekend in July, and it's a comedy festival in this field in Ireland, or in this park in Ireland. It's a comedy festival in this park in Ireland, and unlike other comedy festivals that are just held in bars and stuff, they put up, I think it's 5 or 6 tents, and there's just lineups throughout the day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, in each tent. You probably get 3 shows in each one, maybe 4 or 5 comedians to a show. There's a smaller tent then that has like the local comedy clubs getting to put on their favourite acts, and then they fly over big acts from the UK, the US, and around the world. And it's just so much fun because like you go in, you can only get into the park with a ticket. So you're just roaming around, and everyone's just roaming around together, and you know, it's a real nice time to not just meet some comedians, but see so much great comedy. And Langston was one of my favourites that weekend, and we sat down on the final day of the festival. He had been out with a lot of the American comedians to go watch a hurling match at Crow Park, and we talk a bit about that at the start. I think I should describe what we talk about at the start, because sometimes when it's just joint in progress, you can be like, what are they talking about? But I like it to start with the guest, but then that does negate that. So I will tell you what we're talking about as we're going to go in. When we're going in, we're talking about hurling, Crow Park, all the Americans having the crack. But no, he is fantastic. Go check him out at Langston Kerman online. He's got a Comedy Central stand-up special, Light Skin Feelings, on both video and audio online. He's a writer for Southside on Comedy Central. And yeah, it's just, wow, it says here, I just noticed this. He was selected by Chris Rock to write for the 2016 Academy Awards. So there we go. Oscar written comedian. But as I said at the start of the episode, this is the series finale. 10 episodes to a series. We made it to 10 whole episodes just yet. Maybe one day this will go weekly, but I just like doing them in batches and then going away and recording some and then coming back and giving you these. I'm going to spend some of the off time promoting some of the old episodes. We're still trying to get this off the ground, so rather than just plow through with new episodes, people are joining every single week finding this, and you know, sometimes there's some great past ones that people just don't know exist. So if you haven't, now's the time to go back and check. I'll be sharing some of my favourite bits from each episode, promoting some of the acts from the past episodes, and then behind closed doors. Well, we're all going to be behind closed doors now, but once we're all allowed out, hopefully in the not too distant future, go out and record some more for series 2. I've got a couple in the bank, so look, if we're all stranded for the rest of our lives and we can never get out, don't worry, this won't be the last episode of the podcast. We do have some more episodes coming, but this is the series finale. Thank you so much for just listening. Thankfully, there is people listening. I check the stats far too regularly on a, I won't even say a daily basis. I'm going to say 15 times, 20 times a day. And it's just, it's really comforting and really rewarding to know that people are listening to these. If you are listening, follow at My First Gig. And you know what? How about you say, hey, just send out a tweet. I'm listening to the series finale of My First Gig podcast with Langston Kerman. Maybe go give Langston Kerman, say, hey, following you now as I heard you on the My First Gig podcast. Go back, why don't you say, oh, what a great series that was. My favorite episode was blah, 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 blah. But obviously, say what you want. Don't let me speak for you, and don't let me speak for our guest today. Oh, segues. That's how you be a world famous podcaster and a very funny boy like myself. But no, let's crack on. We want some podcast. Do you want some podcast? Yeah, I want some podcast. Turn it up, guys. Turn it up, turn it up, turn it up. Here we go. It's My First Gig with Langston Kerman.
I experienced hurling for the first time, and what a dream it was. Like, the person who picked me up from the airport, multiple people on the street were like, hurling is happening this weekend. It's a big game. You guys should go. And then we bought tickets, and it was tight. It was amazing.
So, yeah, a group of you went. How much do you know about hurling?
I didn't know it existed. As far as I know, this sport was not real. And we went, and people were describing it, and it sound silly, so everybody's like, it's the fastest game in the world. And
yes, like the fastest land sport in the world.
So.
Yeah.
And the American ego is sort of like, bullshit, we got faster things than whatever you think you're doing. But it is. It's super fast and super sort of like intense the entire time. It was great.
So, yeah, it was Limerick against Kilkenny in, I think, the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, semi-finals.
Did you go there rooting for them? I saw you yesterday. You had the Limerick colors on you.
I committed to Limerick because I was surrounded by people who were cheering for Limerick.
Okay.
And I don't match this community, so I figured I might as well at least blend in
where you can.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the outlier who also chose the outlying team.
Well, see, yeah, Limerick are the underdogs, but Limerick also has a bit of a vibe. They're nicer now. I was born in Limerick.
I heard it was a shithole of a city.
It was known as Stab City for a while because that was their method of communication was knives for a long time.
Tight. So but, I think I picked the right one. What was Cal?
Kilkenny.
Kilkenny?
The Cats, they're called.
Yeah, I don't need that shit. I want a good stabby team.
But see, now, as a comedian, Kilkenny's home of the Kilkenny Cat Laughs Festival.
Mm.
And now you could have pandered to them to hopefully come back.
I'm so sorry for what I said. Hey,
take it all back.
Not stabbing is also cool.
So there's an American comedian, Josh Prey, I think is his name, who's gone viral in Ireland just recently because he came across a hurling match.
Yeah.
And he said he can't understand it. And it's mad for us because, like, anytime I've been to America and I've gone to like baseball or basketball or American football matches, like we're aware of them. I'm sure because it's like we consume a lot of American TV and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean.
But it's mad to think that you can come here and there's this thing in a stadium of 80,000 people and it's absolutely mental and clueless to the lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, but our shit is everywhere.
Yeah.
For better or worse, American stuff exists in literally every facet of everybody's shit, and it's not the same going back. We're very blind to whatever else is happening in the world, which is probably gross and not a nice thing, but it's the fact about the way that we live.
Like, it's a rough sport. Like,
it is a rough sport.
They don't wear helmets. There's metal on the end of their sticks and they won't wear helmets.
Realistically, we're never gonna do it because you guys don't get paid for it.
Well,
so it's a thing where we're like, they get to beat the shit out of each other for free. No, go ahead.
Yeah,
enjoy yourself.
I think they train like four nights a week, play a game in front of 80,000 people, and then they go back to work tomorrow.
Those guys are in great shape.
It's
saw
ridiculous.
Them warming up and shit. They're fucking big dudes.
Yeah, it'd be a nice takeaway from Ireland anyway.
Hell yeah, I did it.
So yeah, before we get into your first gig, I want to ask you, what's your first memory of comedy that you can remember?
First memory of comedy, I guess, I don't know. If we're talking straight stand-up, I used to spend a lot. There's a show in America, or a show that used to exist in America on this channel, BET, which is like the black network in America, that specifically had like this television show called Comic View, where they would play just sort of stand-up every night. And it was a sort of like hip-hoppy mix of like different stand-up comedians that they would like DJ in between stuff. I would watch that literally every single night. And then I would watch like music videos after that and stay up super late when I wasn't supposed to, whatever. And so that, I think, was like sort of the first memory I have of stand-up comedy. But anything before that is probably like the Muppets.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Jim Henson-based comedy. So I'm not sure, but it's somewhere in between the Muppets and Comic View.
What age were you been when you started watching those live stand-up shows?
I had to be like 10.
So quite young. Like,
yeah. I mean, at the time I didn't have any sense that this is what I wanted to do. I just thought they were really cool.
Mm.
And the performers in particular were very, charismatic and high energy and sort of like running all over the stage and like super big act outs, and that's not at all who I am as a performer. And so I think even then I sat there and thought, oh, I'm never going to be able to do stand-up because it doesn't look like what they're doing. And it took years to sort of like then go see other types of performances to recognize like, oh, I could do what I'm capable of doing. I have to articulate my thing a little differently than the things that I admired when I was 10.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then when would you've actually experienced comedy like in person? Like, do you remember when you first saw a live show?
My first live show, I think, was at a club called Zany's in Chicago. That's where I'm from. And I went there and saw a bunch of comics, but one in particular who I'm still friends with, this dude, Danny Callis, who's a really funny comic based out of Chicago, and he has like a very thick Chicago accent, and like his whole character is being like this sort of like rough Chicago guy. And I remember watching him and being like, that dude has like a comfort on stage that I want to be able to build towards. Like, I like how comfortable this dude.
So when you're watching him and you're thinking that's what you'd like to be, when you're seeing comedy for the first time, are you starting to think you would like to try it out or give it a go? Or?
Yeah, I think by that time I had sort of, when I was going to see it live, I had committed to sort of like, oh, I want to try this. I don't think that I had told a lot of people about it. I think I was keeping it a secret, sure, in part, yeah, because it was embarrassing. Like, if I'm not good at this, I don't want motherfuckers to know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
I mean? But yeah, I think at the time I was like, oh, I'm going to try this and I just want to see what it looks like from these people so that I can eventually go on and do it on my own.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you remember what it was that made you want to give it a go? Because like, so you're, when you're watching it on TV, you're saying that, you know, I could never do this.
Yeah.
And like, if that's your impression of stand-up comedy, what do you see that makes you think, oh, this is my in now, I could do something similar?
Well, I think a lot of things happened. I went from 10 to 22 by the time I tried it, like decided to start doing comedy. But I like left college. I graduated from college, but by that time, like, the economy in America had failed, so there weren't a lot of jobs for us in 2009, and so I couldn't find a job. I was living in my mom's basement, and by that time, I'd also started doing, like, performance poetry, or previously was working and doing performance poetry, and so when I would do the shows in college, a lot of times I ended up hosting the shows for the like poets. And so when you're hosting, you're reading a poem up top and then the rest of it is just about keeping the energy up and keeping the show moving. And so I would like oftentimes end up just talking shit in between people's poems. Somebody read a poem about their dad not loving them enough, and then I'd go up and make fun of their dad. And then that ended up getting laughs and sort of like energy back from the audience. And I realized to some extent in retrospect that that probably was like the prompt for like stand up, where it's like, oh, I'm having fun in between. I can do that. I could do the fun part all the time.
Wait, was it a conscious effort that you could sneak this in, or was it when, once it happened, you're like, oh, wait, that's...
No, I think it was much more accidental than conscious. I think, obviously, by that time, I had been watching a lot of stand-up, so my attraction was towards funny, but I don't think that it was like a concerted effort to be like, I'm going to try stand-up in between people's poems. It was just like, oh, I'll go talk. And sometimes the talking got big laughs, and then I thought, that's better than the other thing.
So, you know, you've experience of getting up in front of people.
Yeah.
Putting a microphone in your hand, putting a bit of pressure on yourself. So, like, a lot of people, when they start, their pressure is, that's what's hard for them, is right. standing in front of a group of people.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've experienced that already, you're probably more focused on your material now when you eventually start.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had built a comfort on stage that I don't think is as common for people who are just starting.
Definitely, yeah.
But I also think, this is just a funny thing about poetry. Poetry is just so much more of a, or it curates a much kinder audience that, you know, even if you hear a bad poem, the culture of poetry as a listener of poetry is to clap. It's to support it, snaps, whatever it is that people do. Comedy is not like that at all.
Yeah, literally, you're not going to heckle a poem. It's like, that's a shit poem.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, comedy is the we're going up against our enemies every night, right? Like, the expectation is that we're not funny until we are funny. So the audience is never really our teammate. They're like somebody we're having to work against, and hopefully they come on board immediately, kind of thing. So it just is a different vibe. And I think that was the hardest transition, was like, you go from a thing where no matter what I say, everybody is proud of me, to a thing where no matter what I say, everybody is going to think I'm an idiot.
Right.
Until I prove them other. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about how you went about getting booked. Did you start hanging around in Zanies, like talking to people, asking advice, or?
Weirdly enough, and she's here at this festival, but Cameron Esposito was literally one of the first people to sort of explain what booking, the process of booking was like. But basically, I think I reached out and because I had been doing her open mic in Chicago for years, not years, I had been doing it for like 6 months. And I reached out and I was sort of like, hey, I think I'm funny. I think I've been doing well. You are doing well in the city. What do I do to do what you're doing, or at least some version of what you're doing? And she explained that, you know, it's all about reaching out and getting to know people and spending time in rooms. Even the ones, the shows you're not on, you should be going and hanging out and introducing yourself and going through that whole process. And so that's kind of what I did. Just sort of like taking that advice to heart, and it sort of didn't work. Like, I really didn't book any gigs while I was living in Chicago. I did 9 months in Chicago before I moved to Boston. And so that entire time I was just mostly open micing. I did one gig the entire time I was there.
So would your first gig have been an open micer?
No. Yeah. My first gig was while I was open mic. I was open micing. I had reached out to Cameron. She told me what to do. I was doing all these other things. And then a friend of mine who I had been doing open mics with had this room. His friend was running this room on the south side of Chicago at this place called the Checkerboard Lounge. And he said that he could give us both like 5 minutes to go do time. I'd never been there. I don't know anything about this, but he's a homie. He told me to go. So we're going. And we drove out south and we did this, or we went to this venue thinking it was going to be a good time, and ended up being like a 300 seat room with like 20 people scattered in it.
Yes, yeah.
Like 7 of which were there for the show. Was like a mixed thing. So it wasn't just comedy. It was like we were the only comedians, but then there was like rappers and like DJs and like singers, whatever. But 7 people in the audience were all performers, one of whom, it was his birthday, and he was dressed in all white, wearing a crown and sunglasses. So it's like, this is gonna fucking suck. It's the worst thing that could have possibly happened for my first gig in any form. And I went up, and the dude didn't know me, so he put me up first. He told me do 5 minutes. I went up. I probably made it a minute and a half in before a dude all the way at the back of the bar, who's not even facing the stage. He's watching an NBA game on the TV. He doesn't even turn around. He like is listening but watching the game. And he just from the back goes, boo, boo, nigga, boo. And I'm just standing on stage with the 3 jokes that I knew how to do. And I just like finished up and got the fuck out of there, because it was like, this is embarrassing. I don't even know how to fix this.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So that's what you considered like the first gig?
That was it.
Wow. That's, that could be tough.
Getting booed off stage.
How do you have a second gig after that?
Because we're all sick, right? Like, there's
want to fix it. Like,
there's a reason that all of us do stand up, and it's not because we're healthy. It's because we made a choice that we think we're better than human logic. Logic says you don't know your audience. You don't know these people, so you have no ability to make them laugh. Laughter comes from familiarity and intimacy, and like, yeah. A shared experience with people. We're creating a false shared experience, and that's like the magic of our work, right? And I, like you, probably are a sick person who believes that I can create that familiarity even when it doesn't exist. So despite the fact that I was booed off stage, I was sitting there like, nah, I could do better. This could be solved. I'll make that guy in the back like me the way that he doesn't right now.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like it could crush you, but, like, to be a bit defiant and motivated coming out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was sad for a week. I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't crushing. It just isn't crushing 10 years later.
Do you remember who the other person doing 5 minutes was on the show?
Yeah, he lives... His name is Darrell Norris. He lives in Florida now. We keep in touch very rarely, but he's a nice dude. I haven't seen his comedy in years. But he was, when I was like trying to figure comedy out, we ended up like going to a lot of open mics together. So it was sort of like a nice, just a dude you look over at and you go like, all right, there's somebody else here who's as unfamiliar and scared as I am, instead of sort of like going in these spaces alone.
So when you know you've got 5 minutes, like, I know you've had the, you know, you're trying to make funny kind of moments based on the poems when you're doing hosting those shows. But when you know you've got 5 minutes and you have to write 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But you've never written a set before. How do you go about that? Do you just kind of, where did you take your inspiration from?
I don't know that any of us know how to do it until we're doing it, right? Mm. Like, the first time I ever had to do a longer set, longer being like 15 minutes, I thought I had five. You know what I mean? But you go up and you do what you can do, and then you figure out how to talk through every other idea that you might have had. And then you realize, oh, I should pepper these things or fill in these blanks or elongate this idea, or, you know, sort of like try to turn this thing that I said into a joke, and a real joke, and not just a thing that I blurted out because I was uncomfortable. So I think the first attempt at writing a set is really just literally writing down all the ideas that you know you have. And then as you go along, you figure out how to make that into a real set. Like, how do I mold this into something that isn't just a list?
And obviously when you get booed and you leave a minute and a half in,
yeah,
you probably give up on some of that list right there.
Yeah, you give up on some of the list, or you really buckle down and figure out what it was that upset that person.
That next show, I've got a lot left that I didn't get to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember what your opening joke was that night?
I don't. I honestly don't. I used to have this joke. My mom hated it. Where I talked about I'm a big John Mayer fan. And talking about how like big of a fan I am, that like he had this weird article that he wrote years ago where he not wrote, but he was in this Playboy article where he talked about how his dick is a white supremacist, that like he's not racist, but his dick prefers white women. And it was one of those things where people all called him problematic and a bad person for suggesting that he wouldn't have sex with black people, whatever. And I remember having a bit about my, how much I loved him despite whatever like racism is cooked into his behavior. It was like, I still have sex with John Mayer. I don't care if he doesn't want to have sex with me. My mom hated that shit, but I feel like that probably was in there, and it wasn't the right bit for that audience in particular. It was like an all black audience. Nobody listens to John Mayer. Nobody gave a fuck about what I was talking about. And
certainly not when you bring up what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to ask you, do you have any memories of the crowd that night? I guess that guy behind the bar watching the game is a pretty crowded one.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't even remember what he looked like. I still remember the dude with the crown and the sunglasses.
With the crown and the white suit.
Because he went on, I went on, Then the comic went on after me. He did 5 minutes. He did pretty well. And then the dude with the crown and the sunglasses went on, and he was a rapper, and he went on and rapped for like 20 minutes. And it was unbearably bad, but the 7 people that were there for him were going crazy because they're there for him.
That's so, his birthday.
Yeah, and it was his birthday, and it was one of those weird things where, like, the ego of the comedian is still the ego, right? So I'm sitting there, like, furious that I didn't get the warm reception that this guy in a crown and sunglasses is getting.
You thinking at that point, you're like, right, when I have a second gig, I'm going to make sure it's on my birthday.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta change my whole look. This is... This regular clothes thing isn't working for me.
You said earlier that you're a bit defiant coming out of it. You're like, right, you're going to keep on going. Like, so how long did you stick with those open mics before that moment came when you reached out to Cameron and started trying to get booked on gigs then?
I probably reached out to Cameron like 5-6 months into me working. I left Chicago like 9 months into me as working as a stand-up. So I didn't.
Oh, that was for stand up?
No, I left for grad school.
Okay.
And went to Boston to write poetry. Like, I went to school for poetry. So that was like sort of a transition where I, by that time, had sort of committed that like stand up was going to be the thing that I wanted to do. But I also had a backup plan, which was grad school. Then once I got to Boston, I got a shit ton of shows. Because, and maybe this is true here, like when you move scenes, a lot of times you are treated like the new guy immediately. You start over. But when you've been doing stand up for 9 months and all the other new guys are literally just starting, you look way better than everybody else.
Yeah, because although you're brand new, you've got however many months of experience.
Exactly. So I had been booed off stages. I had gone through some of the you know, trenches of the whole thing.
You had thicker skin.
Exactly. I looked like a veteran compared to the other people that were sort of in the same peer group as me. And so in Boston, I was excelling and doing really well for what I needed to do. And I think that was really good for me because it was a great, like, confidence boost. You go from getting nothing to getting a lot all in a quick turnaround. And so that really helped me understand, like, oh, this is what your funny actually does. This is what would make people laugh if you can learn to, like, really hone that and sharpen it. So that was what the Boston experience was like getting funny.
Right.
Yeah.
That's taking the next step. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
If I could take you back for one last question, take you back to that South Chicago first show.
Yeah.
And right before you go on stage, if you could pull yourself just off to the side and give yourself a little bit of advice to you before you go on, what do you think you'd say?
Oh, man. The piece of advice I would give myself before I go on stage. I think, in retrospect, the thing I probably would either don't do it, or it would have been like, talk to them. Like, I think that there's a big part of comedy, or at least the way that we approach comedy in the beginning, where it's like, I wrote these jokes, I will recite these jokes, I will finish with more jokes. And I think that what I figured out as an artist, as like a person, is I like connecting with the audience. I like to be able to feel like whatever I'm saying is present in the room, that they feel the presence in the room, that we've shared something together. And part of that comes from interacting. Giving some crowd work to them, like really figuring out who they are in the midst of sharing who I am. Nobody just wants you to tell, like, if you walked into this room and just started telling me information about yourself, you'd be a fucking weirdo. But if you come up to me and say, hey, how are you? How are you enjoying things? And then you tell me about yourself. Now we're having a good conversation. I don't think stand up is that different. I think they want to feel like we've engaged before you've become like an artist kind of thing. And I think that it took years to figure out how to properly do that. But when I did, it was really helpful, and I probably would have benefited from it a shit ton that night.
Thanks for chatting to me about your first gig.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me.
Perfect stuff.
Fuck yeah.
Brother Doom, boom, boom. Another season bites the dust. Brother Doom, boom, boom. well, another doesn't really make sense because it's only the first season you had, so just one season, though. Oh, you're getting ahead of yourself. You've only done one so far.
I am losing the plot, but it's okay. At least I have you guys with me. Thank you so much for listening to my first gig today with Lanx and Kerman. What a great episode. What a great season. Oh, don't mind if I say so myself. How about you go back and you listen to James Acaster? You listen to Adler Hanlon. You listen to Reg D. Hunter. You listen to Laura Lex. You listen to Catherine Bohart. You listen to Stuart Goldsmith. You listen to Sean Walsh. You listen to Jamali Maddox. You listen to Kiri Pritchard-McLean. And how about today's episode with Lanx and Kerman? Guys, thank you so much for joining me. Dwayne Dugan, I am your host. Yes, let's not forget about little old me. If you like listening from me, guys, then go follow me at Dwayne Dugan. I'll try not to spam you too much with my first gig promo. Got some fun things coming up for series 2 of my first gig. Got some fun things coming up for the Cherry Podcast Network about that around that time too. But look, sure, we don't know what's going on. Stay safe out there, guys. Wash your hands. Keep in touch. We'll see you on the other side. Thank you so, so much for joining me this series. You're the best. I'm the best. We're all the best. Take it away. We are the champions, my friends. Dum, dum, dum. And we'll keep on fighting till the end. Dum, dum, dum. Oh, come on, Kitty, with the backing vocals. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers, 'cause we are the champions of the world.
It's the My First Gig Podcast.